I have to be able to bring out the hard facts. Because before you can attain peace, justice is essential.
I agree.
Before you can even attain peace, you need to be able to lay the facts, the truth on the ground. And then we can agree to live together in peaceful coexistence.
This is the Babel Undone podcast. It's a podcast for curious people that want to get a deeper understanding about our complex world. And I'm one of the hosts. My name is Johnny Moore. I'm president of JDA Worldwide and the Congress of Christian Leaders. And I am joined by
Joseph D'Souza, the Archbishop of the Good Shepherd Church of India, an Indian based in India and doing ministry all over the world.
Bishop, today our subject is
understanding Christian persecution in Nigeria.
You know, Nigeria has actually become the epicenter of Christian persecution, with extremist violence claiming the lives of at least 4,000 Christians annually that we know about. And the truth is, it's probably a lot more than that. And what has happened in the north of Nigeria has now spread to countries all around it. These radical groups like Boko Haram and the Islamic State of West Africa have worked to radicalize local communities against their Christian neighbors, seizing their land and committing unimaginable atrocities to men, women, and children alike. This crisis has displaced millions of people, and the Nigerian government can certainly be doing more, as should the allies of Nigeria and friends of Nigeria around the world. It is, in certain parts of Africa, for sure, a genocidal effort to eliminate all the Christians there. And everyone should be talking about this. Almost no one is talking about it, Bishop, but today we're going to talk about it.
And Gideon Paramalam is an ordained minister and a gifted Bible expositor. He's an advocate for the persecuted church under the Gideon and Funmi Paramalam Peace Foundation, where he serves as the president and CEO. Gideon serves on the board of Redemption Crusaders and recently completed his term on the Board of Trustees for the Chapel of Salvation at the National Institute for Policy and Strategic Studies in Kuru, Nigeria. He's also working on a 5-year strategic mentoring initiative for 100 younger leaders in Africa. The global church needs to learn about the existential threats facing their brothers and sisters in Nigeria. Gideon is the perfect voice to help us understand what's happening right now.
All right, Gid, thank you so much again for this invitation. I know the Premier Radio in the UK. I actually subscribe, so I listen to most of the interviews that are conducted through the Premier Radio, and so I'm really, really encouraged by this invitation. Now, who is Gideon? Gideon is just a regular guy. Gideon has been a missionary most of his life, working with university and college students through IFES, which is the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students. In the UK, it would be UCCF equivalent, something like that. And then in the US, it's InterVarsity. But also, I started a peace foundation together with my wife. And part of the Peace Foundation is to advocate for Christians who are persecuted. And just by this in introduction, I would say that I am married to one wife, and we're blessed with 5 children. And I just love to promote anything that is Christian. That's the way God has wired me right from my conversion to Christianity at the young age of 14. So I come from Kaduna State in Nigeria. Kaduna State in Nigeria is a very strategic state, but also a state in which we've seen a lot of Islamic dominance, where Christian voices are marginalized and silenced. when I graduated from the university in 1980, by the way, I read political science and a minor in international relations, but God called me into ministry. So I relocated to Jos, which is like, Jos is the equivalent of the Wheaton, of what Wheaton City in Illinois is to Christianity in the U.S. So most of the Christian organizations, big churches with millions of members, denominations, the headquarters are located in Jos. Many of the familiar student ministries that we know, Navigators, Campus Crusade for Christ, most of their headquarters has been in Jos. So I live in Jos now, and I've been living in Jos for over 40 years.
Gideon, we met in Nigeria, and I've always been concerned about the church in Africa, particularly in Nigeria. And on that trip, I had with me a very, very well-known American human rights activist. And, you know, we met with so many people over a short visit. In fact, it was the last international trip I made before COVID-19 shut down the entire world. And when I came back, I wrote my publisher, and I said, you don't choose to publish books. The publisher chooses to publish a book or not. But I wrote the president of the company, and I said, I'm not taking no for an answer. We have to immediately tell the world about what's happening there. And he agreed to do it. And I wrote a book called The Next Jihad. I don't think that there's a more inspirational Christian community in the world than the Christians of Nigeria. And also, I don't believe there's a more threatened community in the world than the Christians of Nigeria. What has happened there is just unbelievable, and it should not be happening. You should not have to be so strong, but you are. Now, most of our listeners, you know, haven't seen or haven't experienced what I experienced when I went there, and the people that I met with. And so, I'm just wondering if you would give us you know, an overview of what has been happening to the Christian community in your part of the world.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Johnny. I actually read a bit about your report after that visit, and let me just seize this opportunity to thank you for coming to identify with us, and especially taking time during that visit to actually meet with some of the victims, but we've changed their names. We don't call them victims anymore. We call them survivors. Because I recall bringing to you one of the ladies that was actually kidnapped by Boko Haram, and God gave her a miraculous release after staying with them for 1 month. And she was able to meet with you. You met with her very briefly, okay? So, yeah, but let me... First of all, let me lay a bit of a background as to the history and demographics of Nigeria so that they can understand the context a bit. And then I would answer that question in a much deeper and longer answers, because I believe it's good for me to paint a picture for people to see and hear and know about what's happening in Nigeria. Now, Nigeria is Africa's most populous nation with over 200 million people. Nigeria is a country that has an interesting demographics. When you look at religion, you have a significant, vibrant Christian community, missions movement in Nigeria with a significant population. The population actually between Christians and Muslims is almost half and half. And many times we actually believe that there are more Christians in Nigeria than the world has cared to acknowledge. Why? Because of internal contradictions. Nigeria came under what is called an Islamic jihad in the 18th century, 1804 to be specific. And so you had an emirate system in which Muslims were able to produce emirs. And when the colonialists came in the 1900s, they decided to align with the emirate system where the Muslims had an upper hand. And because of that, they engaged in what has been recognized as indirect rule. So in the northern part of Nigeria, you had many of the colonialists, because they were not many in number in the large geographical area of Nigeria, they decided to govern the local people through the emirate system. So that automatically gave the Muslims an upper hand. So that has been the history. Now there was an amalgamation of the northern and southern protectorate by Lord Lugard. So majority of the missionary activities that took place in Nigeria in the 19th century, 20th century, took place mostly in the southern part. But in the northern part, the Muslims argued that the north is Muslim, by the way, which is not true. And yes, we have the north is predominantly Muslim because of the number of Muslims that are located in the north, but the north is not an exclusive of Muslims. There are significant, vibrant Christians communities in the northern part of Nigeria, and I happen to be one of them. And I know the north. I've also lived in different parts of the north where you would call them Muslim cities or Muslim cities. But even in those Muslim population, you have Christians. You have the Maguzawas. The Maguzawas rejected Islam and they preferred to practice paganism. Back in those days, they wouldn't accept Islam. But when Christianity came, surprisingly, in the heart of the Northwest, where you have places like Katsina State, Zamfara State, Sokoto State, there are several Maguzawas. You can Google it about the Maguzawas. That's Hausa-believing Christians who rejected Islam. So the North is not entirely Muslim as they always want to portray to the world. And I think I thank God for opportunities like this so that more people can get to know that, look, there are more Christians in the North than has previously been acknowledged, either by the colonialists, unfortunately, British, really did acknowledge. They gave lots of preferences to the Muslims. But I think that Christians, actually, the persecution has helped for then the world to know that there are more Christians in Nigeria than that have been developed and portrayed in the past. You have a significant Muslim population also. Because of the evangelistic commitment of Christians, Christians have actually evangelized significant parts of the North. But then you end up having, with the support, tacit support of government, Christians are gradually marginalized in the North. So you talk about the northern part of Nigeria, particularly places like Sokoto, places like Katsina. You know, churches are denied the basic rights of having certificates to build their churches. That's structural persecution. Christians are not able to get promotion in government offices. That's structural persecution. So that has been on from the colonial era right through to the first civilian administration in 1960 through to 1966, January 5th, when there was a military coup. When the military came, actually it didn't take long. The Muslim political power actually began to govern through the military. And so this structural persecution had continued. But then in 1987, we began to witness not just structural and systemic persecution. Churches began to experience frontal attacks. They were attacked, killed, churches built in one single day, I think sometimes in March, between Kaduna and Zaria. Zaria is a university city where I went to my university. Over 1,000 churches were burned down. Many prominent pastors burned down in their pastorium.
Wow.
And so that frontal attack from 1987 has continued. And by 2002, when the seeds for Boko Haram was planted and formed in Yobe State, northeastern part of Nigeria, things began to change. And by 2009, terrorism set in Nigeria. And that's the way it has been from that time until now that we're talking. And
yeah, talk to us, Gideon, about that a little more, like about the terrorism of late. Because, you know, we hear about occasionally we hear about attacks, but my impression is that it's much, much more frequent than people realize.
And the other question we have is there an outside force or is there an inside force, inside government, ideologically and financially? Who is funding this?
Okay, so let me go back to Johnny's question. And that's a very good question, because the frequency of the attacks, basically now I would say the attacks is almost daily.
Daily.
And deadly.
Wow.
So we have daily and deadly attacks taking place.
Mm.
Okay, so
it's just such a shocking thing. Like,
statement.
So many Christians all around the world, like in your country, in my country, they just continue on with their life. Daily, yes. And deadly. Daily and deadly.
Yes. So let me quickly share some specifics, and I'll come back to the bishop's question. Okay. The systemic targeting of Christians in Nigeria intensified significantly in the early 2000s. That's when, after the military left in 1999 May, the civilian administration took over, and everybody thought, no, we're going to have freedom now. The military is no longer there. Everybody's going to have freedom, democracy. And then all of a sudden, by December 1999 into early 2000, we got what we never imagined. The Muslim-dominated states in the north, regardless of the Christian population that were there, started advocating for the adoption of Sharia, the Islamic law, to be practiced. And that period, several Christians lost their lives because they protested against the adoption of Sharia in a number of northern states. And significantly, probably almost between 10 and 13 states adopted Sharia. So that in itself is another form of persecution that Christians are facing. So and we move on. So now, and with the rise of global jihadism, particularly with the Islamic revolution in Iran in 1979, we began to see that even some of our universities, young people, Muslim leaders were being radicalized. Actually, some of them abandoned university education in Nigeria. Some went to Libya. Some went to Sudan. They were influenced by the Salafist movement, El Turabi, and some actually went to Iran, and they got trained. And today, the Izala movement in Nigeria has become one of the deadliest movements, but they're doing so very quietly.
Hmm.
Very quietly. Actually, and I can say this here, when we began, by the way, our Peace Foundation has been involved in helping many of the girls that have been kidnapped, and with the help of God, some of them have come out. And when we debriefed some of them, something came to fall. That when Boko Haram started, they actually started together with the Izalas.
Wow.
But the Izalas decided to give up fighting with them. And what happened? They said, look, they would rather take over the Nigerian government from within rather than fighting a military campaign from outside, like Boko Haram is doing. So they broke apart. So that breaking apart, the Izalas came in and they're fighting inside. Now you would hear that Izalas are persecuted in Nigeria and there are advocacies for them. Yes, I've also had to advocate because sometimes the government has clamped down on them. But it's the Sunnis, those in government who are Muslims, are mostly Sunnis, okay, attached to Saudi Arabia. While they're doing their own fighting against the influence of the Izalas that are more influenced and more aligned to Iran. But the basic agenda ultimately is the same: Islamize Nigeria and get the Christians, to be subjugated. Let them live as slaves or second-class citizens in their own nation. Now, not many people would like to hear this truth. I'm a peace builder, so I have many Muslim friends, including prominent Muslims. But because of this interview, I have to be able to bring out the hard facts. Because before you can attain peace, justice is essential.
I
Before you
agree.
can even attain peace, you need to be able to lay the facts, the truth on the ground. It needs to be acknowledged by both parties that this is what is happening, this is correct, this is not correct, and then we can agree to live together in peaceful coexistence. So, by no means am I advocating anything against Muslims. No, it's going to be in about a month plus now. I celebrated my 65th birthday.
Happy
So by
birthday.
no means am I a young man. I know Nigeria deeply, and I've held national positions in Nigeria. I've also held positions where I supervise 28 countries in Africa. So when I talk about what's happening in Africa, I'm not just talking as somebody who read from somebody's publication. Yeah, of course, I read and I benefit from research done, but these are also countries I've visited. I've had to camouflage myself how many times to visit some countries, So the struggle between the Izalas and the Zunis, the Sunnis, in Nigeria would look like they're opposed to one another, but no, it's just a matter of strategy. So Boko Haram said, look, let's fight them, kill them, subjugate them, and they're demonstrating it by what they're doing. But many of these Izalas are gradually finding their way into government, and nobody knows exactly what will happen. So I just want to quickly put that there,
Then,
and
and
this may help
just
to
for
open.
our Gideon, just to interrupt you for a second, for our listeners, just so everyone understands, I'm having a hard time pronouncing the word, the Nsalas are Shia.
Okay, Izalas.
Yes.
Izalas are Shiites. Shiites, yes, Shiites. Yes, exactly. Izala. Izala.
Now I get it. Yeah,
Shiites.
Izala. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. So yeah, I mean, some of the Izalas actually can meet and sing choruses and clap hands just like Christians.
Yeah, sure.
But they do that, yes. Well, so you have that in Nigeria. So, and all of these activities are currently ongoing. And the battle for the soul of Nigeria is real. So let me quickly continue with the answers to what you have asked, Reverend Johnny. And that is, so we discover that after the formation of Izala, Izala has actually grown in Nigeria, and they are the evangelistic arm of the Muslim community, and they're ready to go on and on and on and to Islamize, sorry, Nigeria, but that's on anyway. So let me quickly move on. Okay, so now I want to just comment because according to the a report by Ofra is the Observatory for Religious Freedom in Africa, and in which our Peace Foundation has been privileged to contribute significantly in providing some of the figures, because we document religiously motivated killings in Nigeria. And they came up with a 4-year report that was released in August 2024. And that report indicated that about 22,000 Christians have been killed, and over 22,000 Christians also abducted and forced to pay ransom between 2019 and 2023.
Massive.
Yes, and this I'm talking about statistics that we document. So it's not like, and some of these are primary data.
Yeah, and when people,
we actually have field officers who step out and sort of record killings. Okay. Now, again, our Peace Foundation doesn't segregate. If Muslims are killed, we record it. If Christians are killed, we record it. Even if animists or atheists are killed, we record it. So it's an intense work. So the violence has taken on different forms over the years, from Boko Haram's insurgency in the Northwest to the more recent escalation of armed Fulani herdsmen or Fulani ethnic militias across the Middle Belt where I live. So I've been witnessing this violence myself for over a decade now in Jos, which is the heart, like the capital of the Middle Belt. Now, what started as isolated incidents has evolved into what many observers now characterize as a systemic campaign of violence against Christian communities where Christians are killed in large numbers. So let me give 10 examples, specific local examples of persecution in Bokos local government in Plateau State. Now, next month, December, will mark 1 year of the unprecedented attacks directly targeted at Christians on Christmas Eve in Bokos County of Plateau State. On November 23rd, Christmas Eve, into November 24th, November 25th. Personally, I had to create what you call a crisis situation room throughout that period because of the killings taking place in Bokos. When Christians were told, you will run with your Christmas meat in your hands. It's like Thanksgiving and the turkey in America. I wish I can describe it in the US. And then you're doing Thanksgiving with family, surrounded. You know, you want to talk about love, you want to talk about all kinds of things, and then all of a sudden an attack bursts in and people start to run with their their turkeys or Christmas turkeys, yes, even in Britain, you know. So that happened, and over 200 Christians were killed.
Wow.
That's documented and recorded. I have personally visited Bokos about 5 times since that attack, and I continue to maintain touch with people in Bokos, including last night and this morning. So the Christmas Eve attacks covered 30 communities. That's why I said it's daily and deadly. Now, there was also a week of carnage in Bokos. No fewer than 16 people were killed between August 26th and September 5th, 2024. This is after the mass killings. And most of those killed in these communities would be places like Dambukur, Ngasi, Dafor, Bargesh, Zarat Kwatas, Tenti, and Tenti Baba. This is where lots of people were killed, still almost on a daily basis after the Christmas Eve attack. Now, five members of one family were killed on October 9th, 2024, at Wumat Kwatas West in Bokos. 5 people were also killed, including 4 members of one family, on October 15th, 2024. It's painful for me because October 15th was my birthday, and I was celebrating that birthday with several victims, including some from Bokos. And that same period, when one of the pastors whose wife was killed, pregnant wife was killed, and all his 5 daughters, Pastor Gideon, he left us to go for Sunday service in Bokos. He was stopped. He couldn't proceed because people were killed that weekend. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Tuesday on my birthday. So you can see that. And then 4 Christian youth were ambushed and killed while returning from a tin mining site in Kubwa on October 10th. 2 Christian youths were killed and ambushed at about 5 p.m. around Kura Falls, Barak in Ladi, on October 23rd, 2020. And then the militias also kidnapped a paramount ruler, Galadima of Tangru, on November 18th. And ransom was paid. November 20th, his body was found on the no November 23rd. So when he was kidnapped on the 18th, ransom was paid on the 20th, and then
And they
on
killed him
November
anyhow.
23rd.
They killed him
Yes,
anyhow.
exactly. They killed him. And several farmlands have been destroyed in what I have characterized as food terrorism, where cows are unleashed to destroy the crops of Christian communities. These are reality.
It's terrible.
Now, yeah, and I know that we live in a country in which the principle of denialism is being practiced. The government would rather deny that persecution exists than to admit it. So, for instance, they could view, oh, why would Gideon be talking like this? The truth of the matter is that food terrorism is taking place in Nigeria. It's also impacting on the global food crisis. The Middle Belt area, the North Central area where I live, has been described as the food basket of Nigeria. But right now, the farmers can hardly go back to the farms.
It's
They're killed on their farmlands. They're
it's
killed on their homes.
it's
They're
unbelievable.
killed on the roads. And I've just read out to you, you can see that it's almost daily. Now, because of the constant killings and destruction, Christian properties, many families have had to relocate their children to safety regions of the capital. So you leave the lands and the lands are taken over, and you have a strange situation in which the attackers occupied. We visited with ADF team from the US and some church leaders, top senior church leaders on the plateau, and we went to a village in Bokkos called Television, where a pastor was killed. We went to the site where this pastor ran for safety and he was killed there. And then another pastor said, look at those villages ahead of you, not too far, we're talking about like 10 kilometers. And he said, those are Christian villages. They've been captured by the Fulanis. They've been renamed. No Christian can go there. And one city was called Holy Ghost City, a village called Holy Ghost from the Bible, the Holy Spirit. Can you imagine? It's been renamed with a Muslim name. So this is this. And I close with this. Reverend Nehemiah Mutfang, perhaps, has been working in some of these areas for 9 years. And so during crisis, he has remained there, but now they have begun to recognize his face, and his life is in danger. I'm only mentioning it because I happen to be in this interview. He had spoken to me going back to August and said, look, he will need to be relocated. Otherwise, his life is in danger. That is the challenge that Christians face, and that is the reality. And on Saturday, a man was kidnapped, ransom paid, but his dead body was picked up. This is just
It's
Saturday.
just Gideon, I'm so sorry we're out of time, because we could have this conversation tragically for hours. The list is so long, and there's no end to it. And these are the things that we know about, not the stuff that we don't know about that's happening. And for the life of me, I don't understand why the church all around the world isn't only talking about this. And I just want to thank you for being our link to what's happening there. And you have our promise that we're going to do more to try to help the church in your country and in the surrounding countries. And we are so inspired by your efforts there for your entire life, serving an incredible, incredible, perseverant, powerful Christian community. We don't know what the future of the church is in Nigeria and in those countries, but what we do know is there are no Christians like the Christians there. Nigerian Christians are made of steel. And you are the light of the world, and the one thing that we know is that even terrorists can't kill the light and the message of Jesus Christ. And I just want to thank you for taking time with us today on Babel Undone, And I just pray that our conversation will inspire a lot more Christians to care more.
Pray and figure out what can we do for Nigeria and for you in this situation. Thank you so much, Gideon, for sharing your heart with us.
Bishop, I don't even know what...
Where do you start, where do you begin responding and just, you know, just these forces of darkness and how Iran comes across again as a bad actor in this part of the world, trying to take over a nation, trying to Islamize, you know, to turn it into an Islamic country, and then going after God's faithful, and then how these brothers and sisters are fighting for their faith, and this kind of violence is unbelievable, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's, by the way, that is one of the things I learned in this conversation, you know, the direct link between the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979 and the lighting of all these terrorist fires. And it's very important for our European listeners to understand that it was France that gave refuge to the Ayatollah. It was France that facilitated the Ayatollah's return to Iran. Europe is part of that story. And here we are decades and decades and decades later, and that Islamism, it's not just a form of Shia extremism. It's also lit in, you know, this Sunni extremism. And
that really bothers me, the Western honeymoon with Islam, not understanding there are a lot of good Muslims, but there is this dominant strain of jihadism, and not understanding that, and then giving them a blanket affirmation. And then now we all are reaping the consequences of the naivety of the Western political powers. Really, we are all reaping the consequences in many parts of the world, including India.
Yeah, I mean, I spend half my life working with Muslims on coexistence and interfaith and all these things, multi-faith humanitarian work. And they always say the same thing to me, like, you guys aren't paying enough attention to the extreme. You pay less attention to the extremists than we do. You know, and it's I don't know. And we just have to do more for the Church of Nigeria.
Yeah,
we have to do it. Every Christian in the world, this is your problem. Do something.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.